Welcome to Band Camp. I'm Jennifer.
And I'm Dan, and this is the podcast where we read band books and try to figure out why they were banned in the first place. And this season, we are reading A Wrinkle in Time by Madeline L'Engle. Just a heads up, we are going to be spoiling it since we're reading it out loud. So if you need to catch up, you can check out Band Camp Season 5, Episode 1, and you can catch up that way. Follow us on Instagram at bandcamp_podcast. Before Jennifer starts reading, let's roll them in. Here he comes, the third member of our team. Look at this guy. Looking good, pal. This is the robot. He's our fact checker, announcer. What else do you do? No, the question is, what can't you do?
Previously on Band Camp, Meg, Calvin, and Charles Wallace plunge deeper into cosmic chaos, guided by celestial beings. They face dark forces and unearth deeper mysteries of the universe. As our heroes close in on Meg's father, back on Earth, Dan and Jennifer grapple with the enigmatic Tesseract. Will our interstellar adventurers unravel the secrets of the cosmos? And will Jennifer and Dan finally figure out what a Tesseract is? What happens next? You're about to find out.
Thank you, robot. And with that being said, let's begin Chapter 6 of A Wrinkle in Time. Again, they focus their eyes on the crystal ball. The Earth with its fearful covering of dark shadow swam out of view, and they moved rapidly through the Milky Way. And there was this thing again. Watch, the medium told them. The darkness seemed to seethe and writhe. Was this meant to comfort them? Probably not.
Anything that seethes and writhes is usually not good. It's not comforting.
In the darkness, right. Why would she even wonder that? Like, what would make her ask that? Suddenly, there was a great burst of light through the darkness. The light spread out, and where it touched the darkness disappeared. The light spread until the patch of dark thing had vanished, and there was only a gentle shining, and through the shining came the stars, clear and pure. Then, slowly, the shining dwindled until it, too, was gone, and there was nothing but stars and starlight. No shadows, no fear, only the stars and the clear darkness of space, quite different from the fearful darkness of the thing. You see, the medium cried, smiling happily. It can be overcome. It is being overcome all the time. Mrs. Whatsit sighed, a sigh so sad that Meg wanted to put her arms around her and comfort her. Tell us exactly what happened then, please, Charles Wallace said in a small voice. It was a star, Mrs. Whatsit said sadly, a star giving up its life in battle with the thing. It won, oh yes, my children, it won, but it lost its life in the winning. Mrs. Witch spoke again. Her voice sounded tired, and they knew that speaking was a tremendous effort for her. It was not so long ago for you, was it? She asked gently. Mrs. Whatsit shook her head. Charles Wallace went up to Mrs. Whatsit. I see. Now I understand. You were a star once, weren't you? Mrs. Whatsit covered her face with her hands as though she were embarrassed and nodded. And you did what that star just did. With her face still covered, Mrs. Whatsit nodded again. Charles Wallace looked at her very solemnly. I should like to kiss you. Mrs. Whatsit took her hands from her face and pulled Charles Wallace to her in a quick embrace. He put his arms about her neck, pressed his cheek against hers, and then kissed her. Meg felt that she would like to have kissed Mrs. Whatsit too, but that after Charles Wallace, anything that she or Calvin did or said would be anticlimax.
I gotta say, I did not see that coming, did you?
What, that she was a star?
Yeah.
I wonder what they even mean by that.
Well, it's gotta be like, you know, a star like in space, right? Unless you think she was Larry Wilcox from Chips, someone who used to be a star.
Well, no, that's not what I meant, but I thought this was happening on Earth. Like, what? How would a star...
That's right.
It's like, wouldn't that destroy the planet?
Because we're looking at Earth.
Right.
And then we saw the star
There's
blow
a dark
up.
Thing writhing, and then the star explodes. And
What if we are looking now into the future, and our sun will blow up one day, and that's all she wrote for us?
That would get rid of the dark thing.
After what happened last week. So I was watching Fox News, because I wasn't really watching Fox News. I saw David Pakman make fun of Fox News.
Yeah.
I was watching the eclipse news. Did you see them talking about that?
Yeah.
Those fox cats, man, they do not like science, not even a little bit.
I can't believe it would be on news.
Well, they throw it down to some fox dude down on the Texas border, you know, because it's all Biden's fault that there's an eclipse, you know. But so, you know, the guys go, okay, well, when is it happening? And the guy down there, not believing in science, just goes, well, it's allegedly supposed to be happening in 20 minutes. We'll see. No, we know exactly when the eclipse is coming, you moron.
But weren't they also attributing it to, like, God coming back to the earth and, like, it's happening because there are bad people in charge? Or, again, it's Joe Biden's fault.
It's Joe Biden's fault.
The true Mrs. What's-It, Meg realized, was beyond human understanding. What she saw was only the game Mrs. What's-It was playing. It was an amusing and charming game, a game full of both laughter and comfort, but it was only the tiniest facet of all the things Mrs. What's-It could be. So Mrs. What's-It is presenting herself in a way that is understandable to human children.
And that's why she has the weird getup, because kids like weird getups.
That's true. They do love a good getup.
Right? It's like your daughter dressed her.
That's
Let's
right.
go shopping. You need a lot of pink, something furry, and socks that are wet. Come on.
I didn't mean to tell you, Mrs. What's-It faltered. I didn't mean ever to let you know. But, oh my dears, I did so love being a star. You are still very young, Mrs. Witch said, her voice faintly chiding. The medium sat looking happily at the star-filled sky in her ball, smiling and nodding and chuckling gently. But Meg noticed that her eyes were drooping, and suddenly her head fell forward, and she gave a faint snore. Poor thing, Mrs. What's-It said. We've worn her out. It's very hard work for her. Please, Mrs. What's-It, Meg asked. What happens now? Why are we here? What do we do next? Where is Father? When are we going to him? She clasped her hands pleadingly. One thing at a time, love, Mrs. What's-It said. Mrs. Who cut in. Walls have ears. Yes, let us go outside, Mrs. What's-It said. Come, we'll let her sleep. But as they turned to go, the medium jerked her head up and smiled at them radiantly. You weren't going to go without saying goodbye to me, were you? She asked. We thought we'd just let you sleep, dear, Mrs. What's-It patted the medium's shoulder. We worked you terribly hard, and we know you must be very tired. But I was going to give you some ambrosia or nectar or at least some tea. At this, Meg realized that she was hungry. How much time had passed since they had had their bowls of stew, she wondered. But Mrs. What's-It said, Oh, thank you, dear, but I think we'd better be going. They don't need to eat, you know, Charles Walls whispered to Meg. At least not food the way we do. Eating's just a game with them. As soon as we get organized again, I'd better remind them that they'll have to feed us sooner or later.
Eating's a game with me, and I'm losing that game, man.
The medium smiled and nodded. It does seem as though I should be able to do something nice for you after having had to show those poor children such horrid things. Would they like to see their mother before they go? Could we see Father? Meg asked eagerly. No, Mrs. Witch said. We are going to your father, Meg. Do not be impatient. But she could see her mother, couldn't she? The medium wheedled. Oh, why not? Mrs. What's-It put in. It won't take long, and it can't do any harm. And Calvin, too, Meg asked. Could he see his mother, too? Calvin touched Meg in a quick gesture, and whether it was of thanks or apprehension, she was not sure. I think it is a mistake, Mrs. Witch was disapproving. But since you have mentioned it, I suppose you must go ahead. I hate it when she gets cross, Mrs. What's-It said, glancing over at Mrs. Witch. And the trouble is, she always seems to be right. But I really don't see how it could hurt. And it might make you all feel better. Go on, medium dear. The medium, smiling and humming softly, turned the crystal ball a little between her hands. Stars, comets, planets flashed across the sky. And then the earth came into view again. The darkened earth, closer and closer, till it filled the globe, and they had somehow gone through the darkness until the soft white of clouds and the gentle outline of continents shone clearly. Calvin's mother first whispered to the medium. The globe became hazy, cloudy, then shadows began to solidify, to clarify, and they were looking into an untidy kitchen with a sink full of unwashed dishes. In front of the sink stood an unkempt woman with gray hair stringing about her face. Her mouth was open, and Meg could see the toothless gums, and it seemed that she could almost hear her screaming at two small children who were standing by her. Then she grabbed a long wooden spoon from the sink and began whacking one of the children. "Oh, dear," the medium murmured, and the picture began to dissolve. "I didn't really." "It's all right," Calvin said in a low voice. "I think I'd rather you knew." Now, instead of reaching out to Calvin for safety, Meg took his hand in hers, not saying anything in words, but trying to tell him, by the pressure of her fingers, what she felt. If anyone had told her only the day before that she, Meg, the snaggle-toothed, the myopic, the clumsy, would be taking a boy's hand to offer him comfort and strength, particularly a popular and important boy like Calvin, the idea would have been beyond her comprehension. But now it seemed as natural to want to help and protect Calvin as it did Charles Wallace. The shadows were swirling in the crystal again, and as they cleared, Meg began to recognize her mother's lab at home. Mrs. Murray was sitting perched on her high stool, writing away at a sheet of paper on a clipboard on her lap. "She's writing Father," Meg thought, "the way she always does, every night." The tears that she could never learn to control swam to her eyes as she watched. Mrs. Murray looked up from her letter, almost as though she were looking toward the children, and then her head dropped as she put it down on the paper and sat there, huddled up, letting herself relax into an unhappiness that she never allowed her children to see. And now the desire for tears left Meg. The hot, protective anger that she felt for Calvin when she looked into his home, she now felt turned toward her mother. "Let's go," she cried harshly. "Let's do something." "She always looks so right," Mrs. Wetsit murmured, looking toward Mrs. Witch. "Sometimes I wish she'd just say, 'I told you so,' and have done with it."
I disagree. I think it was important for her to see that, because now Meg is fired up and she wants to go kick some darkness ass, right?
Well, there's that, but then she also realized that Calvin also needs help.
If this is one of these things where, like, it's a Close Encounters of the Third Kind thing, where, like, at the end, they're going to have to make a decision to go live in a different dimension or go home, Calvin is going to go to the other dimension or get on the spaceship or do whatever. Because what does he have to go home for?
I mean, yeah.
The love of Meg.
Well, there's that. But also, like, he can do a lot of good on Earth. Maybe he could be one of those bright, shiny stars. "Oh, medium dear, I don't feel badly," Mrs. Wetsit said swiftly. "Look at something cheerful. Do. I can't bear to have you distressed." "It's all right," Meg assured the medium earnestly. "Truly it is, Mrs. Medium. And we thank you very much." "Are you sure?" the medium asked, brightening. "Of course. It really helped ever so much because it made me mad. And when I'm mad, I don't have room to be scared." "Well, kiss me goodbye for good luck then," the medium said. Meg went over to her and gave her a quick kiss, and so did Charles Wallace. The medium looked smilingly at Calvin and winked. "I want the young man to kiss me too." It's a little weird. Sorry. "I always did love red hair, and it'll give you good luck, laddie me love." Yeah, inappropriate. I don't know. Like, don't force kids to give you kisses. It's just not the right thing to do. Calvin bent down, blushing, and awkwardly kissed her cheek. The medium tweaked his nose. "You've got a lot to learn, my boy," she told him. "Now, goodbye, medium dear, and many thanks," Mrs. Wetsit said. "I dare well see you in an eon or two." "Where are you going to, in case I want to tune in?" the medium asked. Camazotz? Camazotz? Says Camazotz. Sounds like Camelot, but with zots in there.
They specified Camelot.
That's right. That's exactly what it sounds like. Camazotz, Mrs. Wetsit told her. Where and what was Camazotz? Meg did not like the sound of the word or the way in which Mrs. Wetsit pronounced it. "But please don't distress yourself on our behalf. You know you don't like looking in on the dark planets, and it's very upsetting to us when you aren't happy." "But I must know what happens to the children," the medium said. "It's my worst trouble, getting fond. If I didn't get fond, I could be happy all the time." "Oh, well, ho-hum. I managed to keep pretty jolly, and a little snooze will do wonders for me right now." goodbye, everybody. And her words got lost in the general buzz of a snore. Oh, she zonked out.
Ooh, she's got a case of the narcolepsy. Wait, why does this why is she so worried about, I have to know what happened to the kids. You got a huge crystal ball there. Why don't you just fire that up when you're curious and see what happens?
I guess she has to know where to look.
What they should do is put one of those Apple eye tags on these kids before they leave.
There you go. Yeah, an air tag.
Yeah.
Come, Mrs. Witch ordered, and they followed her out of the darkness of the cave to the impersonal grayness of the medium's planet. Now, children, you must not be frightened at what is going to happen, Mrs. Witch warned. Stay angry, little Meg. Oh, I like that. Stay angry. I don't know why I like that. Stay angry, little Meg, Mrs. Wetsit whispered. You will need all your anger now. You know, it's nice because, especially back then in the 60s when this was being written, girls and women were not supposed to be angry. They were literally being locked up for being angry.
Yeah, you're right.
So good. Good for Mrs. Wetsit. And I also like how anger is not looked at as a bad thing either.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the Bible, I believe, like the thing they always like to point out is like turn the other cheek. And, you know, like they kind of always imply that Jesus was never angry. But again, I've never fully read or understood the Bible. But there's some people I talk to, like my husband, who says, actually, Jesus was pretty angry a lot of the time. I think that's important to validate, you know, like anger can be powerful and it can be a good. I mean, I'm angry. I'm a very angry person. Like I'm angry at all the injustices. Mm-hmm. I'm not just like mad because I don't have or, you know, because I have plenty, you know, I'm a white woman, but I am angry. I am angry when I see what, you know, things that are going on.
Well, why deny like human feelings, right? I mean, it's okay to love, but it's bad to hate. Hate is fine. I mean, you know what I mean? Like they're all legitimate feelings and people can feel whatever they, you know, however they want to feel, right? Hmm. I mean, because they're real.
Yeah, right. And you can use your anger, you know, so.
Yeah.
Anyways, stay angry, little Meg, Mrs. Wetsit whispered. You will need all your anger now. Without warning, Meg was swept into nothingness again. This time the nothingness was interrupted by a feeling of clammy coldness such as she had never felt before. The coldness deepened and swirled all about her and through her and was filled with a new and strange kind of darkness that was a completely tangible thing. A thing that wanted to eat and digest her like some enormous malignant beast of prey. Now the darkness was gone. Had it been the shadow, the black thing? Had they had to travel through it to get to her father? There was the by now familiar tingling in her hands and feet and the push through hardness, and she was on her feet, breathless but unharmed, standing beside Calvin and Charles Wallace. Oh, so is that how a wrinkle feels?
Maybe.
Was that another wrinkle?
Yeah, I think they wrinkled.
Is this Kamazots? Charles Wallace asked as Mrs. Wetsit materialized in front of him. Yes, she answered. Now let us just stand and get our breath and look around. They were standing on a hill, and as Meg looked about her, she felt that it could easily be a hill on Earth. There were the familiar trees that she knew so well at home. Birches, pines, maples. And though it was warmer than it had been when they so precipitously left the apple orchard, there was a faintly autumnal touch to the air. Near them were several small trees with reddened leaves very like sumac and a big patch of goldenrod-like flowers. As she looked down the hill, she could see the smokestacks of a town, and it might have been one of any number of familiar towns. But there seemed to be nothing strange or different or frightening in the landscape. But Mrs. Wetsit came to her and put an arm around her comfortingly. I can't stay with you here, you know, love, she said. You three children will be on your own. We will be near you. We will be watching you. But you will not be able to see us or to ask us for help. And we will not be able to come to you. But is Father here? Meg asked tremblingly. Yes. But where? When will we see him? She was poised for running, as though she were going to sprint off immediately to wherever her father was. That I cannot tell you. You will just have to wait until the propitious moment. Charles Wallace looked steadily at Mrs. Wetsit. Are you afraid for us? A little. But if you weren't afraid to do what you did when you were a star, why should you be afraid for us now? But I was afraid, Mrs. Wetsit said gently. She looked steadily at each of the three children in turn. You will need help, she told them, but all I am allowed to give you is a little talisman. Calvin, your great gift is your ability to communicate. So communicate with all kinds of people. So for you, I will strengthen this gift. Meg, I give you your faults. My faults, Meg cried. Your faults. But I'm always trying to get rid of my faults. Yes, Mrs. Wetzet said. However, I think you'll find they'll come in very handy on Kamenslots. Charles Wallace, to you, I can give only the resilience of your childhood. From somewhere, Mrs. Hu's glasses glimmered, and they heard her voice. Calvin, she said, a hint. For you, a hint. Listen well. Here comes the hint, and it's a quote from Shakespeare's Tempest. I hate the way poetry is written. I think this is for the master thespian, though.
You want me to do this, Jen, if it's a poem?
Yes, please. I need Dan of the House of Schultz.
Okay. Where's my intro?
Lord Daniel, stage swooner Raymond of the House of Schultz, master thespian and voice actor in the 21st century of our Lord.
For that he was a spirit too delicate to act their earthly and abhorred commands. Refusing their grand hest, they didn't confine him. By help of their most potential ministers, and in their most unmitigable rage, into a cloven pine, within which ripped, imprisoned, he didst painfully remain, didst imprisoned, and God bless, Mayor, imprisoned
the United States.
And God bless the United States. Thank you very much.
Imprisoned, he didst painfully remain, Shakespeare. The Tempest.
Where are you, Mrs. Hu? Charles Wallace asked. Where is Mrs. Witch? We cannot come to you now, Mrs. Hu's voice blew to them like the wind. I do not know everything. Still, many things I understand. That is for you, Charles. Remember that you do not know everything. Yeah, that's one he needs to know about. Then the voice was directed to Meg. To you, I leave my glasses, little blind as a bat, but do not use them except as a last resort. Save them for the final moment of peril. As she spoke, there was another shimmer of spectacles, and then it was gone, and the voice faded out with it. The spectacles were in Meg's hand. She put them carefully into the breast pocket of her jacket, and the knowledge that they were there somehow made her a little less afraid. To all three of you, I give my command, Mrs. Witch said. Go down into the town. Go together. Do not let them separate you. Be strong. There was a flicker and then it vanished. Meg shivered. Mrs. Wetzet must have seen the shiver, for she patted Meg on the shoulder. Then she turned to Calvin. Take care of Meg. I can take care of Meg, Charles Wallace said rather sharply. I always have. Mrs. Wetzet looked at Charles Wallace, and the creaky voice seemed somehow both to soften and to deepen at the same times. Charles Wallace, the danger here is greatest for you. Why? Because of what you are. Just exactly because of what you are, you will be by far the most vulnerable.
You're a little baby boy, a little toddler. Beep, beep, beep. She turned really mean all of a sudden.
Just because of what you are, you will be by far the most vulnerable. You must stay with Meg and Calvin. You must not go off on your own. Beware of pride and arrogance, Charles, for they may betray you. At the tone of Mrs. Wetzet's voice, both warning and frightening, Meg shivered again, and Charles Wallace butted up against Mrs. Wetzet in the way he often did with his mother, whispering, Now I think I know what you meant about being afraid. Only a fool is not afraid, Mrs. Wetzet told him. Now go. And where she had been, there was only sky and grasses and a small rock. Come on, Meg said impatiently. Come on, let's go. She was completely unaware that her voice was trembling like an aspen leaf. She took Charles Wallace and Calvin each by the hand and started down the hill. End of section.
It's time for PPP, problematic points to ponder. What, if anything, would be considered banworthy in this chapter?
I think religious people, a lot of the times, obviously, there is the one true God, like, you know, Christianity. There's one true God, and you have to believe in that God.
Yes.
And
lots
that's why
people believe that.
And it doesn't even matter. It's Christianity. I imagine a ton of religions feel that way. You have to feel this is my God is the real God. Your God is the fake God, right?
Lots of people feel that way.
Not having a God at all, that it's just there is no God. It's just kind of weird up there in the universe. That's something that could freak people out too, right?
Oh, right. Saying things are beyond human comprehension.
Yeah. Or maybe that there is no reason. I mean, you don't know what's out there. It's all a mystery. Like, you don't have to believe
it. Yeah, mystery, right.
You know, which I guess is still a belief. Like, I don't know what's out there. Something's out there. I mean, now the kids have proof because they saw a black sinister thing.
The
sinister thing.
Dark thing.
Yeah.
Right. The dark thing, which seems to be the villain of this book.
They don't like it when kids question authority. They don't like it when adults question authority.
That's right.
Just don't question the guy in charge.
And then what's another PPP?
We did...
I'm having a hard time. I just want to discuss the book, but I can't really think of any.
Well, I mean, again, we run into this problem. I think everything we're saying so far is honestly a stretch. I mean, it's always like, well, I kind of understand. Maybe some people might feel this way and that could get them banned or get the book banned. And some people might feel, but it's like, don't feel that way. Life is tough. Wear a cup, you people. Like, you can't get bent out of shape with everything, and you can't just all of a sudden just want to cancel every book. I'm going to ban every book because it's just not how I think it should be. Well, it is what it is, and this is just a fun kids book so far. So if you want to hold your kids back and not let your kids experience what the majority of the kids have experienced, and they turned out just fine by having fun adventure books, right?
Yeah, there was nothing in that chapter.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, in all of the books we've read, I've always felt that way. You know, To Kill a Mockingbird, the racial stuff was definitely real ugly, but it happened.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I can't imagine any book we've read so far. I don't even half of the time understand why it would be serious. If I was running a library or a school board and some Karen came up to me, I don't know, this Fahrenheit 451, have you read it? Yeah, it seemed pretty cool. I don't know, ding, 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 ding. It's like, go away.
We're going to have to do like a gay book next time because that's what they hate the most. It's like books about LGBTQ plus people.
Why are they so afraid?
They're not afraid. They just have hatred.
That's it. It's okay to be different than you. We're different than you. And we're good. You're different than us. And you could use a little work.
All right. We've caused enough literary chaos for today. Thank you for listening, Scary Book People.
You can find us on Instagram at Bandcamp_podcast, where you can connect with fellow Scary Book People, join in the polls and discussions, and you can vent about the evils of book banning. And we really do hope you join our community. We'd love to see you there and engage with you.
Bandcamp is produced and hosted by Dan Schultz and me, Jennifer Davis. All media used in this production was done so under the protection of fair use. See you next time.
See you guys later.